Hi, everybody. It's me, Duncan Trussell, reporting in to you from Austin, Texas, the land of freedom and comedy. The last episode with David Nichtern, a lot of y'all really enjoyed that. And this month, I'm trying to have as many guests on as I can that I feel like have a cooling effect or something nuanced to say about the current tense state that lots of us are experiencing, especially if you've been gazing into your demonic hypno-rectangle, which I have been. You ever see the Dark Crystal? Can you pull something up for the intro, Josh?
Yeah.
I want to show you guys something. When I was a kid, I remember when the Dark Crystal came out. Man, I was so excited. I love Jim Henson. And my theory on the Dark Crystal is the Dark Crystal was when Jim Henson was going through his LSD phase. And I recommend watching it. Maybe not so much for your kids if you have kids, but I want to show you something that just burnt itself into my memory forever. What you're seeing right now is something that it traumatized me when I was a kid. You know, it's Jim Henson. You think you're going to be getting, like, it's kind of like hardcore Muppets. Some Kermit the Frog, some Miss Piggy stuff. Suddenly you got these reptilian fucking bird things strapping these cute little potato people into fucking chairs. And then they stare into the Dark Crystal. And watch what happens. This is the most fucked up shit ever. You know, back then they didn't care about kids the way they do now. This was, I don't know what it was rated, PG, but you know, everyone who took their kids to this, you know, they were thinking about like Fozzie Bear. And by the time you're at this part of the movie, which is sort of far in, there's not much you're going to do. And suddenly your kid is watching this cutie get his soul drained by a fucking purple crystal. Look at this. Look at it. It's incredible. The work they did. It's extracting potato jizz out of this poor little guy. And look at the look on his face. He withers, eyes go blind, turns old. What the fuck, Jim Henson? What the fuck? It's adrenochrome. He's talking about adrenochrome harvesting.
I was about to say that.
But, all right, you could cut it off now, Josh. But I don't think there is a better depiction of what's happening to all of us right now from staring into our phones. But it's not like it's extracting actual salty podling jizz from us. It's extracting our humanity. It's sucking out of us something. We're all getting drained, man. It's actually literally, there's just no telling how much jizz gets extracted every day because of porn in the world. I mean, it's extracting jizz too. It's extracting a variety of essences from us, many of which I don't even think we've quantified yet. At some point in the future, they'll probably be like, God, didn't they know they were getting their vatrium gas extracted from the technology they were using? We don't know about vatrium gas yet, but we're gassing out here, friends. And because of that, and I'm loath to say it, but at one point, this has happened to a lot of podcasters, dear friends of mine would say things to me along the lines of, man, you need to, you know, you should... You should use your platform to like spread good cheer. And I hated that shit. You know, I was like, I don't want to get caught up in that way of thinking, you know, the notion of significance, I think, is antithetical to being funny. Like if you think you're significant or something, you're going down a dark road, you know, in general. And I don't think that's what they meant. I think I was sort of misinterpreting what they were saying. But regardless, at this point, I feel like maybe it is a good thing to send some good vibes out into the world and thus David Nectern last week. This week, Doug Rushkoff. Rushkoff is, I'm lucky. I don't even remember how we got to be friends. I've been friends with him for a very long time. And he's one of those people who online and offline has had a real impact on the way I look at the world. His message, which I guess you could call Team Human, his message of connecting outside of the digisphere, that there's this entire beautiful world right outside our phones. And I know that's a hackneyed thing to say and a cliche thing to say, but weirdly, it's very easy to forget that. And he just has a beautiful way of pointing towards this imminent possibility that's around us all the time, an imminent world that isn't one riddled with fear and division and catastrophe and algorithmic enhanced horror, but a more simple kind of world and a world filled with fucking. This is important. So, everybody, please welcome host of Team Human. All the links you need to find Mr. Rushkoff will be down below. Please welcome back to the DTFH, Doug Rushkoff. You can pick your heart, you can pick your nose, but don't pick your friend's heart's nose. Mr. Rushkoff, welcome to the DTFH. You are the second, I don't know, I don't want to say series because then I'm committed to it, but you were on this list of people after Charlie Kirk got assassinated and everyone just, you know, we entered into like whatever it is, Chernobyl level,
yeah,
like cultural radioactivity after that. I thought of you, I thought of my meditation teacher, some people from the Ram Dass community. I just want to have some voices on the show that might have a way of sort of calming us down or at least some ideas on how to navigate the current powder keg that seems to be planet Earth.
Well, people aren't gonna, people on the left and on the right may not like what I have to say here, but everyone else will.
Well, that means you're saying, that means it's good. That means it's good.
The fundamental thing that is happening here, if you pull back and just look at what's happening, is people are looking at TVs and smartphones,
yep,
and seeing pictures and words that are freaking them out.
Yep.
There's, and I get it. There are bad things happening in the world, and there are bad things happening all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the minute before Charlie Kirk was shot, a child asphyxiated in violence in China, in Palestine, in Rwanda, and probably somewhere in Mississippi.
Right.
So I'm not saying that, for those who believe that Charlie Kirk's death may have been more bad than those other deaths that happened right before on some cultural level, but there's a figure on the screen and there's the ground where you live. The figure on the screen matters more and more to the extent you are disconnected from the ground
right
where you live.
Right.
So it's the Chinese girl who died, who I don't know, who maybe did or didn't, the Charlie Kirk who was shot, these are all horrible things and they're going on all the time. Right, you take a real dose of mushrooms and lie on your back and close your eyes. A couple of hours in, you're gonna see, oh my God, this world is pain and suffering. The unnecessary trauma and grief is. Are you open to that? It's fucking. I'm still recovering from having seen it 2 years ago that way. It's there.
Yeah.
So We can create media and technology and culture around highlighting those points of horror in order to activate or entertain people in a particular way. Or we can acknowledge that we have tools that could show us whatever most horrible thing is happening at that moment and choose to spend a majority of our time helping the other human beings in the real local reality where we are metabolize right. the pain, trauma, grief of this moment.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess if we're going to make a distinction here between the God knows, I'm surprised you went with asphyxiate. I'm going to say there was like probably some kid in Afghanistan who got ripped apart by dogs. You know, somebody ate a poisonous snail. And like their head exploded with a spelunker or something.
Some accidental and some completely intentional. Children being killed by their parents. I mean, there's just every moment there's something bad happening.
Someone clawed their eyes out, probably, yeah. and poured into their eyes,
yeah.
like glyphosate. If I had to guess, I mean, I'm sure that there's a list. In fact, I think I could spend the next hour making up horrible ways that people have died. But right. one difference. And I think that really did add, that amped up the collective trauma I think a lot of people were experiencing, because the algorithm for a second was just, hey, want to see somebody get assassinated? Check it out. Like everybody was seeing it, which, you know, I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of gore on the internet and like it fucked with my head. It was so horrible. But then this was... Hippies like me assumed like, oh, this is going to be one of those moments where everyone's like, dude, what are we doing? You can't do political violence. What the fuck?
Right.
And then it's followed by... I want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Squarespace, my beloved friends, have not only supported this podcast for years, but they have created a technology that I have used and continue to use to make some of the most beautiful websites on planet Earth. Just go to DougGutrussell.com. Be prepared to shake with a combination of inspiration and erotic charge. It's a powerful website, and it works. It's easy to update. Easy to change, and it does everything I could possibly want a website to do, and that is 100% because of Squarespace. They've got literally everything you could need if you want to build a website, if you want to send emails out to people that don't make them feel like you're about to steal their identity. It's got AI that will help you build the website. You can connect all your socials onto your website. You can create paywalls if you want to have members only areas, everything, and it's easy to use. Squarespace is a brilliant toolbox, an ever evolving digital Swiss army knife that you can use to instantiate your dream, your business, your idea, your joke, your absurdist comedy, or whatever it may be, onto the world wide web. Don't believe me? Go to squarespace.com/Duncan. Try it out. Take it for a ride around the block. And when you're ready to launch, which you will be, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace. So many people gleefully celebrate. It just happened. Like it just happened and people were celebrating, or they were adding an addendum to like Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Political violence is bad, but he did say things that were controversial, which is an implicit way of saying, you know, therefore he kind of, you know, brought it on himself. It's like a symbol. It's like a way of like when someone's like, well, yeah, you were assaulted, but
right. It's interesting.
You were wearing a bikini.
I didn't I'm not on Twitter that much, so I didn't see, and I could never actually identify or find an example of that. What I saw, and maybe it's just because of the way that my feed comes to me, what I saw was an immediate effort to capitalize on this death and potential trauma to, you know, lock down a kind of social control. In other words, this became, oh, you see, this is why we have to close leftist media.
Well, you know, what you're talking about here, and you're definitely now I think we have managed to piss off the left and the right, so congratulations right. to us.
But yeah, but I only watch mainstream, so I only saw, like, you know, what Trump was saying, not well, what you
but
know.
But you're talking
were
about, so it's yeah. like it's a horrific feedback loop. So
right.
you've got a group of people who clearly have been who have dehumanized this person to the point that they're doing TikTok dances celebrating him getting shot, and there was a lot of them, man. And also, I wish that Twitter
yeah, that's
had
really
like,
sad.
I wish Twitter had algorithm swapping, where I could be like, Doug, yeah. can I borrow your algorithm for the rest of the
right.
afternoon? But because suddenly, like, all these people who are like horrified are now like, who the fuck are these people? Like, you, it's ghoulish is the only way to describe it. It's ghoulish. Those people, of course, the reason they're acting like that, if you ask me, is it's a trauma shield. It's like, if it, instead of having to deal with just the reality of like a dad got fucking shot, you come up with, there's a rational explanation for this. He kind of didn't say the right things. And then you go gleeful, and then you don't have to feel it. It's the same thing like, if you're watching,
right? I don't know about the glee.
Oh, they,
you know, because I know
a nightmare.
Plenty of
it was. No, you yeah. know good people. You know people who had the correct response to
right.
something like that. But sadly, there wasn't. And to finish my point, now a lot of people are seeing that and they're like, "Oh my God, what the fuck has happened? That people are celebrating this shit? Are they just going to start killing conservatives?" And then, of course, what comes next? Government response. The government response, seeing all that, is like, don't worry, we're going to keep you safe. We're going to keep you safe. Now, Antifa is a terrorist organization, and FCC attacks Kimmel, and so what you're seeing is just like a back and forth between two extremes manifesting as, and then of course when that happens, the response from the gleeful people is, see, fascist police state. And then they're like, oh, I'll show you police state. You want to see a police? And then
yeah.
this is all 100% related to what you initially started off
right.
saying.
I mean, and that's some not the narrative. Right. And interesting, I mean, and it doesn't really matter, but that's not the narrative that I would use to describe what happened. I would say this person was shot, and the vast, vast majority on both sides was like, it is awful that we've reached this state of political violence.
100%.
And when they do say, even though this guy may have been saying really scary things, the fact that it escalated to violence is unconscionable and beyond the pale. And if some friggin', as I would see it, you know, Russian Twitter bots found people celebrating, dancing on TikTok about this, I would think that's more akin to the fake footage they found of you know, Palestinians or Arabs in New Jersey supposedly dancing when 9/11 happened, which isn't yeah. true.
You want it to be fake, but it wasn't. These people said, then what happened?
Right.
The
right, but if there are these outliers, you know, and they really would be
100%.
Outliers. I know people. They're outliers, you know, the same as outliers like, obviously, Tucker Carlson is an extreme outlier to say that people planned this in Jerusalem over hummus, and to joke about the death of Charlie Kirk as, you know, in front of people at his memorial,
right,
to make a joke about people having hummus in Jerusalem to plot this ha-ha, is an outlier, right? That's an outlier. We have to look at him the same way you look at, you know, the child in wherever that was doing a TikTok dance about this is a, that's not where we go. And when it's outliers doing it, it's one thing. When people in the middle and in places of leadership then move into response mode to that, or that's where, you know, that's where it's troubling.
And you, Josh and I, my producer, were just talking about this, which is, if, I don't know, you're on the left and you posted something saying that was unconscionable and horrible, I hope his family's okay, we can't resort to political violence. That's it. That's all you said. You know what happened? You know what the algorithm would do with that? The algorithm would be like, fuck you. I'm not boosting that. That's not going to anybody's feeds. You fucking what?
Right.
And so the outliers that you're talking about, what happens is, you know, some psycho is doing a dance in their car about someone getting killed. That gets picked up by big accounts on the right who start posting it as an example, not of an outlier, but as a general consensus among a blanket group of leftists. Then that, now that an account is posted, the algorithm is like, I guess people like this, and then that starts getting blown up and blown up and blown up, mm-hmm, and gives the impression, I think this is the point you're trying to make, that the world is not filled with a lot of people who just want to go about their daily lives and think it's horrible to murder people, but in fact the world is either populated with rabid leftists who want to start shooting Christians, or the world is populated by anti-Semitic conservatives who want to blame everything on Mossad. And
right,
there's nothing in between. There,
right,
isn't, there's no nuance there.
I mean, the interesting thing to me about what's going on now is, after having resisted and to some extent sort of self-excluding violent people from their ranks, the left living in this, what I'm calling, you know, a fascistic atmosphere, has taken on, has gotten some violent people in it now.
Yeah.
In other words, you didn't, you know, really in the 60s through the Sandinistas, it was pretty difficult for violent people to infiltrate the left. There was the Weathermen, which, yep, did some stuff. You, yep, could say the Symbionese Liberation Army,
sure,
might have been Patty Hearst. Those could be called left. There were those little pockets, but it wasn't generally, you know, people with sidearms and stuff, you know, with the bazookas, you know, you usually associated with more with the authoritarian right. And the like today's, we don't have to call it today's, if you want to not show this today, but the subsequent violence at the ICE office now.
Right.
Which, again, right away, which side did it? You know, well, one of the ICE people was shot, but one of the ICE detainees was shot. So it could have been who, you know, as if. And that should really help us to see that, all right, the someone on each side was shot, and we're still trying to worry about which side was
what
it
team,
that
baby,
did the shooting.
What team?
Who chalks rather
up
than
kill?
Right. Rather than the ideas, we're on fucking team human here.
Yes.
We're on team human, and there's an energy, there's a quality that's killing people, that's inciting a kind of violence.
Yes.
And that's why we do have to look at the rhetoric of our leaders. Are they talking about beating people up, or are they talking about finding unity and calming things down? If they're talking about unity, are they being teased for talking about unity and told, no, you should hate? You should hate? As our president just said, no, no, I hate. I don't forgive. I hate, and I want to hold on to that. What kind of atmosphere is that making? Is it creating fear and violence, or is it creating a sense of, no, we don't need unity, but even tolerance isn't the greatest word, but collaborating, working together here. And on the screen, that's not possible. The business model of the screen is division. The media bias of the screens is polarity. But in the real world, when you're a pinko lefty progressive psychedelic head like me, and you are standing side by side handing buckets of mud to the volunteer fireman, right-wing MAGA hat wearing guy, because your mutual neighbor's house is covered in mud from a flood, which may or may not have come from climate change, the differences are gone. This is really, as far as most of us are concerned, this is, what show are you watching on Netflix or whatever? Right. Are you watching the Kevin Costner right-wing thing about the rancher in Montana? Or are you watching like Mr. Robot about, you know, the lefty revolt against money? Or like me, are you watching both and going, oh my God?
Yeah.
You know, so it's the show. I mean, when Trump was running again, and people were saying, who do you think is going to win? I was like, well, Trump's going to win. I was like, why? I was like, because more Americans would rather watch the Netflix series of Trump season two than Biden season two, right? It's basically that. And the more that we're involved in the screen, the more that we are going to be leaning into this sensationalist, crazy-making stuff. And
that's right.
Then there's layer upon layer upon layer. I mean, for me, this kind of started around 9/11 and some crazy started. Then Obama got elected, which we thought was revolutionary, but he turned out to be Ronald Reagan. Yeah. So we got Occupy, and then it started to get weird. Then we got, you know, then we got Trump, then we got the COVID, then we got Gaza, Israel, and then we got Trump 2, and then we get Charlie Kirk. It's like layer upon layer of crazy, and each one makes so much money for these companies, but each one further distances us from each other.
Yes.
And I'm saying, don't ignore current events or whatever. But get off the fucking screen. Help your neighbor. Kiss somebody. There's an old lady who needs your help. There's people you could do stuff with. Just help people around you, and the government will matter less. It won't matter if FEMA gets there in 3 days or 3 months, because you're taking care of each other. It won't give Musk and all those people all this power over you, because you're not buying their shit. You're going to the local farmer and we're starting to take care of ourselves.
That is beautiful. That's the most beautiful that is something the algorithm is going to be like, fuck that. We're not posting that shit. What you just said, it's like, that ain't going nowhere. That's
every
not selling
second,
tickets.
Right. Every second that you're making love to somebody without an AI flesh bot is like a money. That's a moment that you're hurting the marketplace. You're
that's
hurting
right.
the media.
That's right, man. And this is what I love about you. And I got to tell you, you know, I think about what you say all the time. You're so brilliant. And I can remember the last podcast we did. I think it was the last one. You're talking about borrowing a drill. Like, you had to borrow and how this connected you with a neighbor, and you easily could have gone to Home Depot, bought a shitty drill. So there was a storm in Austin. My neighbor's fence, my fence got fucked up by my neighbor's tree. And I love my neighbor. He's cool, but you know, I haven't spent any time with him really. And
so you sued him.
You heard. He's in jail right now. No, and you know, we were talking, and you know, I was saying, you know, we'll just get someone to fix the fence, and then we can split up whatever it costs. And then we started talking like a week later, and we're both like, how come we don't just fix this fence? And I'm like, yeah, I think we could fix the fence, right? Like, he's like, yeah, we can fix this. And so then I'm in his car, going to Home Depot. We're driving, having the best conversation about kids and meteors, and I'm just realizing I already liked him, but it's like, I fucking love my neighbor. He is so cool and actually literate when it comes to, I had to explain to him, you must understand, I don't know how to do anything with tools or anything. I acted like I knew how to fix the fence.
Yeah.
I don't. And he's like, no problem. And then all of a sudden, now I'm like friends, legitimate friends. I've spent time with my neighbor all because of you, because it would have been so much easier to just get somebody to come and fix the fucking thing. So much easier. And that little moment, it really like, I mean, I don't want to like blow it too far out of proportion, but in a little way, it changed my life. My life, the person I live next to, I know more. I know about his kids. I know like he's funny. I know, you know, like, you know, and he was telling me a story of how in the neighborhood, there was like just this part of it that was just shit, gravel, and just how he organized the campaign with the city to plant flowers there. I've been walking by it. I didn't know he did it. And
right.
All the neighbors came together and, you know, beautified this little part of the neighborhood. And the whole time, like, God, I wish Rushkoff was here.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, that's what I've been talking about, is you put the social back into socialism and get rid of the ism. You know,
it's
just social, where people doing stuff for each other. Now, when I tell stories like what you're telling, because I do a lot of these, you know, freaking business conferences and stuff, a lot of, we won't call them right or left, but business people are there. They'll say, well, that's all nice and good, but what about the fence company? Now, instead of hiring the fence company, you did this stuff for yourself. Instead of buying a lawnmower for everyone on the block, Rushkoff, you're talking about having one or two lawnmowers for the whole block that people share. What about the lawnmower company? What about the old lady whose stock dividends and retirement depends on the coupons she's clipping from the lawnmower company stock?
What about
the employee at the lawnmower company? And the thing is, well, what if the employee gets to work less, right? What we've been finding, this is the interesting thing, is in times of collapse, usually why societies collapse is because they have a pyramidal structure. And a pyramidal structure, it means you're getting a few elites up at the top, and there's societies where the primary value is acquisition and accumulation.
Right.
Go back to the Bible. You know, let's get 7 years worth of grain in there. Just store it up.
Yep.
Store it up. In societies that survive collapse or don't actually collapse, are more distributed, and they optimize not for acquisition. They optimize for leisure.
Right.
They optimize for slack. So the idea is, I mean, remember Slack? I mean, that was our generation's thing.
Hell yeah, you know? I remember Slack.
Bob. You're in Slacker Town now.
Bob.
Right. So exactly. So let's say we buy less lawnmowers. So that means we need less money, so we don't have to work as much. And correspondingly, the guy in the lawnmower company doesn't have to work as much because we don't need as many lawnmowers. So who does this hurt? It only hurts the kind of the shareholder person who wants to make money off all those lawnmowers without actually doing any work.
Christ,
and, you know, in the end, kind of fuck them. Fuck them. What if we put a limit on what? Just say you could only be $1 billion wealthy and then maybe no more after that. Can we put a limit there? It used to be a few million, you know, it used to be $100 million or something, but $1 billion? After $1 billion, can we just say, just it taps out? You can work if you want, but you can't accumulate any more money than that.
Okay, I'm going to out-hippie you.
It would change the whole friggin' planet.
Let me out-hippie you. Here's my dumb dream, and feel free to pop the fucking bubble. I probably need it popped. Here's my dumb dream. So, and I feel pathetic that I'm even talking about how unique it was that I spent time with my neighbor fixing something. He did most of the work, I'm going to be honest. I don't know how to, anyway.
But did you document it? Were you the documenter? Did you take pictures of it happening?
I didn't want to even, I'm going to film you.
Get a podcast out of it.
You know, in my life, there's like a lot of stuff that I do. I get addicted to video games. I've been playing this wonderful game called Silk Song. It's so good. But you know what I've been thinking about? Not that dumb game. I just keep thinking about riding to Home Depot. I keep thinking about how fun that was. You know what I mean? And or
it's great.
I think about time I spend with my kids. I think about, and these things are, there's no way to quantify it. There's no way to sell neighbor time. There's no way to, so my dumb hippie dream is that if enough people begin to realize that those moments that you have been talking about and talking about and talking about not only are way better than any kind of consumerist distraction or consumerist pursuit, but they're free. There's no price tag on it, and it's better. It's a free thing that's better. And to me, if enough people started realizing that, then the market cap, or you could only make $1 billion or all that stuff, it wouldn't matter as much. You know, me and Josh were just talking about the dollars being devalued, but it's like, what if all dollars became devalued? What if the entire quantification mechanism we're using for this is a good thing, it costs so much money, became meaningless because enough people began to realize that is not an accurate gauge for something of value. It doesn't measure value.
Yeah. This is what I was writing about in the earlier 2000s. I wrote this book, Life, Inc., where I looked at not just the establishment of the corporation, but the invention of central currency. There used to be other kinds of currency.
Right.
And they worked more like poker chips. You know, poker chips have no value. Right. They're nothing.
Nothing.
Right. You trade in your, they're nothing. And the way, that's the way money would work in the medieval marketplace, is you'd go there and someone would kind of prime the pump with these little IOUs, but they would all expire at the end of the day. You
right.
know, they were each worth like a loaf of bread or a piece of this or what. And you would, they would prime the baker, or someone would sort of prime the activity with a bunch of these IOUs just so that everybody could trade and get everything they wanted.
Right.
Then it was like, okay, 5 o'clock. Trading day ends, everybody cash in your chips, and it's done.
Right.
You would have no, there was no money
right.
as such. So you could, because it was almost as if the whole society lived in RAM and not on the hard drive.
Wow.
It was all, you know,
that's,
it was
so
all
cool.
Active.
Yes, yeah. Active. That's it.
And what you invested in was your people, was your friendships, was your community, not some number thing. The old lady, it's like we have to live our lives getting a number to be high enough so then we can retire and the number will go down, won't go all the way down before we die. It's like, ugh, it's a nightmare.
Ugh. It sounds like some fucking Mr. Beast, some horrible Mr. Beast challenge. So... to me, like, whenever these moments happen and I'm like looking around, I'm getting lit up, people are fucking blaming this thing, and I'm getting paid by Peter fucking Thiel, or that I'm, you know, insinuating that I'm like pro surveillance state or censoring myself for Rogan, people coming at me, man, and like it's been illuminating for me, really. It really has, in a very good way, because it really made me realize, like, oh, how many times have I believed something that I saw online that's completely wrong? How many
right.
times have I been... This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever found yourself sitting in the back of an Uber or a Lyft, fantasizing that maybe the driver is some kind of oracle sent to you from the universe to help guide you through a difficult moment in your life? I have. Never once thought during those moments that maybe this driver didn't want to hear anything about my marriage, my job, my fears, or my worries. Never occurred to me that probably this driver would just love to turn on the radio and here's another bearded neurotic trying to work out their life problems during the ride to the airport. Not cool. And I apologize to any drivers who happen to watch this podcast. I thank you for your advice. Sometimes you need something more than your Lyft driver. Life is so complex. And I don't know how far you're going, but there might not be enough time at the very least. Not to mention, the odds are pretty good that your driver is not a licensed therapist. Sometimes we need therapy, and BetterHelp is where you can go to get incredible therapy online. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. as opposed to Lyft drivers. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and our 10-plus years of experience in industry-leading match fulfillment rate means we typically get it right the first time. But if you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist anytime from their tailored recommendations. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp.com provides access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Find the one with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Duncan. That's BetterHelp.com/Duncan. Like, heard something about someone that I liked and been like, oh my God, they're monsters. And they're like, none of it's true. And it completely plays into the point that you're making, which is these hypno rectangles are fucking people up. It's like,
right.
Aside, like, I don't like getting, obviously, I don't like being brigaded and harassed, but some very small part of me, unfortunately, felt some compassion for these people, because it's like the world you're living in, that's not the world. And that's a scary world that you're living in. You know, a world where billionaires are co-opting low-level podcasters.
Right. I mean, and I understand too, that's the world that many of our senators and congresspeople live in, you know, that believe that there's Jewish space lasers, believe that many of the Mexican migrants are have bombs planted inside them that can be detonated from afar. I mean, the kinds of things you hear from, you know, our elected leaders, many of them, shows that they are in a nightmare, and that nightmare is contagious enough to get them, you know, to get them elected. It's not just, you know, the so-called little people, that it's, you know, almost everyone is in one form of this nightmare or another. You know, I have friends, I mean, usually the way I try to get people out of the nightmare is by pushing them further in the nightmare. Like, I have a lot of friends. Yeah, it does sometimes. The only good trip is a bad trip sort of thing. Right. Like, I got friends who are trying to get citizenship in Europe, you know, because, you know, they're afraid they'll get cracked down on by, right, by government, and or by fascists, or, you know, are persecuted because they're Jews or something. And just, so they're going to go to Europe. And I'm like, dude, Europe? Like, look at this. This country's got a fascist leader. This one's got that. These ones are talking about that way. This one's got neo-Nazi. It's like, where are you going to go? And it's like, you know, it's like, the extent to which we are networked as a society, as a civilization now, kind of means we sort of all make it or none of us make it.
Right.
You know, there's not like a retreat like
that.
I would say if you've got indigenous, you know, leanings or whatever, then the object of the game is not to get in an airplane and go fly to some indigenous people and live with them, but manifest your indigeneity, whatever that means to you, right here, right now, the way you look at someone else's eyes, with the way you source, yes, your food, the way you, yes, treat your land. It's like, yes, it's pretty obvious.
It. You know, I think one thing you said earlier, which I would love it if everyone just started doing this, so I will make a universal decree. This is now law.
Oh, good. You see? Fascism for good.
Fascism for good. FF.
I like it.
FFG.
I like in your live things. I like in your live ones when you make a law, make a rule. That's how it breaks the rule. Then you go, you're banned.
Self-banned for five.
Right. but then always forgive them. Usually by the end, you go, okay, 5 days. Okay, yeah, 5 hours. Okay, yeah. Okay, you're free.
What's fascinating is they'll do it. What's fascinating is they'll do it. They'll self-ban. But the here's my decree.
Yeah.
I think what we all need to start doing, and we will do this, this is now the law, is whenever somebody commits violence, political violence, any kind of violence. Let's just say political violence. How about this? Instead of trying to figure out, was it a groiper? Was it a conservative? Was it a trans person? How about we do this? That person is not on our team. Whether you're right or left, that's not us. Whatever that is, we'll come up with a new name for them, a universal. I don't know what that name could be. I don't know what that name could be, man. The Malaphites. That was a Malaphite.
Malaphite.
If you decide to like use violence to fucking hurt people, it doesn't matter who you voted for. That's irrelevant. You are now a Malaphite, and we don't like Malaphites. It's not going to work out. Whether it's a leftist Malaphite, a right-wing Malaphite, a groiper Malaphite, a nihilist Malaphite, a Christian Malaphite.
Right. What if it's state-sanctioned Malaphite? It's where it gets tricky, right? So I guess you got to judge then.
Yeah, you're right.
We can't be the judge of it, but it's like, okay, so if you've got a bunch of recently hired ICE agents with masks. So first day, it's like, oh, and you're just a little too enthusiastic and kind of shoot a couple of people or whatever.
I've got the seal of Malefica. It's a certified Malefite. Well, you know what? I think it's a fair point, but this is a cop out. Gonna admit it. Cop out. Copping out. Phase one.
Right.
Phase one, let's start with us.
Right.
If somebody who isn't doesn't have the seal of Malefica, does a violent act, instead of who were they? I guarantee it was a fill in the blank. I guarantee it was an immigrant. I guarantee it was a trans. I guarantee it was a MAGA. Instead of doing that, let's just say that's not us. That's not us. Stop getting
lost.
And
if and even if they claim it's us, it's not us. It's like they're from a, and I agree, they're from a different tribe. They're from the tribe of violence.
Yeah.
And that's something else. And whether they did it for the right or the left or the trans or the anti-trans or the for fascism or for anti-fascism, they're all team violence.
They're all
team violence, and that's not our team.
Then what? Then we're not going to fight each other over this or that. Well, it was the poisoning of Lord Garthor that got into their mind. They fell under the hypnosis of the Baphomet.
Right.
Instead of this shit.
Right. But the problem is now, and this is more of a bigger political thing. There elements of our government now, in order to enact the plan that they're trying to enact, really do need to create a frightening, violent enemy in order to exercise authoritarian control. And that's that makes it tricky. That makes it tricky. But I agree. If we can keep doing that and saying it doesn't matter, it's just team violence, then the response of government would need to be different.
Well,
if we can't get activated that way, then they would need to respond differently.
Right, because for the thing you're talking about to really work, it needs a lot of fear and it needs a lot of division. Once we get those two things, and once we've like created, and this is the thing I'm sure you've experienced, I experience it all the time, which is a demand for like, declare what team you're on. Just say it. Art thou a conservative witch? Art thou a leftist? Say what you're with. And it's like, you know, what wing are you with? You know, and to me, this creature that we're living on, it's got a lot of fucking wings and it's a ball. And it's, you know what I mean? There's a lot of flapping wings. And that invitation to take a side and narrow yourself, shoehole yourself into this place. What the next step is, therefore, you should also accept all these other ideas that go along with that side. It's not just that you're like, you know, I think it's most countries have some kind of immigration laws. I can understand why you'd want to have that. But do I think it's makes sense to separate parents from their fucking kids? Does any of this shit look good to me? I remember when Fox was doing Crisis at the Border. It was one of the most surreal things to watch is they're doing a piece on crisis at the border. Creating an image of these people is like essentially like Mordor. Like these people are coming in from Mount Doom, man. These are like they're coming to eat.
Right.
You.
Well, they're using zombie apocalypse imagery to describe foreigners and migrants.
Moms!
That's preparation, you know.
They cut,
unfortunately, that's preparation for climate change. That's
when they're saying it, they cut to these monsters. And you see these monsters. These monsters are pregnant women holding their children who are crying. And they didn't even try to edit that. They didn't. It's like at least cut to someone who looks mildly sinister. Why are you cutting to this family? The kid's got shitty fucking shoes because he's been walking so long. They're fucking clearly like just like this sad mix of hopefulness and despair. And it's like, But because that's there, does that mean like open borders? No. But let's have a little fucking nuance here, man.
Right.
Can we have a little fucking nuance?
That's the problem. So the digital age, even though we think it's really complex, it's not. It's complicated, but it's super, super simple. Everything digital is right or left. Digital is like a spin
ones
cycle.
And zeros.
It pushes everything to ones and zeros. So all of the things... All of the systems by which we've kind of gotten by over these last centuries are being stress tested by, wait a minute, is it this or it's that? Is this a border or is it not? And it's like, well, it's always been a little, you know, everything is like that. Everything is, not that it's cheating, it's just that it's not absolute. It's a border, but it's sort of semi-permeable because we kind of need workers to do the grapes and stuff, and then we let them, then they go back, and I can get it for you wholesale. You know, it's like, it's a little bit, you know, everything is like that. Nothing is really fair. Right. You know somebody at a club, you know, a young comedian finds you, becomes your friend, whatever, and yes, they do get an advantage because you tell the manager at the club, look, Johnny's actually pretty good. You should give him a thing. Sorry, it ain't fair. It's always like that. And we're growing so intolerant of that. We've become so absolutist in our understanding of things, which is why we move toward either totalitarian leftism or authoritarian rightism. It was like, because it's got to be a thing. And the fact is, there is no system that works. Not like a checkerboard. It's way more weird, mycelial and all. And the thing you have to develop is not the ideal system. What you have to develop is the sort of emotional slack. You need some play in the wheel. You need margins. You need a shoulder on the road.
Yes.
You know, even though you should stay in lane, you still kind of need a shoulder there just in case something happens. The fucking thing.
That's it. Slack. The system is too tight. We need slack in the system. It's like we're in the. That's the craziest thing about it is, the promise of tech was more slack. But it's the opposite. It's had the opposite effect. It's when we connect on the phone, we get tight. It makes you stressed and balled up, and you get nervous and scared. And the conversations, they just inevitably get stuck in these like one of these two lanes.
Yeah. And these lanes are not real.
They're not
real. The lanes are the stuff. It's like way back in this Present Shock book, which I keep thinking about now. I was talking about the difference between living on the ticks of the clock or living in the duration of the second between the ticks. And these things that we're talking about are the ticks. That's not where life happens. Life happens between. That's when the second occurs between the ticks. That's where you and me and love and sex and mushrooms and...
Yeah.
And making the thing with your neighbor, that's where all that lives.
Yeah.
And this television zone, this internet zone, certainly the social media zone, are pure tick. They're pure tick. And that's why you got to be on this ticker, that ticker. And it's like, that's not the place where you breathe. That's not where you metabolize. And if you spend your life on the ticks, you're going to die going, what the fuck just happened? Where was that? You know, and our whole nation is moving on to those sharp, it's like the longitude and latitude lines. It's like, that's not the planet. Those are lines.
It's not the planet. It just, and it's if you ask me, man, this is 100% because of not enough regulation for technology. This shit is, you know, I wish I could remember the name of the book. It's like the history of drugs in the United States. And, you know, back when cocaine was in Coca-Cola, you know, and there was a disorder, which I think was depression. It was their term for depression. I think they called it, I can't remember. It was a really
like malaise or something. Yes. Yeah, they had some. Yeah.
They were saying that people are getting this affliction because things are beginning to move so fast. And fortunately for us, we found the cure.
Yeah.
Cocaine. Everybody's doing blow. You could go to the pharmacy, get cocaine. It's in your Coca-Cola. And for a second, people are like, this shit is going to save the world, baby. Freud's fucking shooting coke into his veins. Surgeons are like on blow, coming up with ways to sterilize their equipment. And then, you know, just like what we're discovering now, as it turns out, cocaine, it's not a good long-term plan for happiness. And then regulation happens. Cocaine becomes illegal and because it's fucking poison. And here we have some combination of drug and radium. You know, we have this beautiful glowing thing that aside from like the technology itself, it's a host to a legion of algorithmic-based manipulative apps that are fucking people's heads up. Clearly, we know it fucks up kids. We know that it's like kids who get screen time, it fucks them up. But because of what you were saying earlier, it's not going to get the kind of regulation it needs. Because
right. Or when it does, it gets politicized. So the governor of New York, this woman, Kathy Hochul, she's a Democrat, and she got the law in New York that kids are not allowed to use their cell phones during school.
Great law.
Yeah, you would think, but you know, in what we could loosely call the Austin contingent is very activated by that. As
what do you mean?
You know,
what the Austin contingent? Please don't fucking pile on the Austin. Don't join that fucking mob. We're idiots. You know, let me just say this. This is what my wife says about the current like furious attack on the quote Rogan sphere, which is, by the way, talk about it. That ain't a fucking sphere. And you know what I mean? The idea of this like crystallized, unified group of Austin comedians.
Right, like you're a WWE team that comes in. Oh, it's the Austin brothers.
My friend was pointing out the like, you know, in the green room, everybody thinks we're all like reading Mein Kampf or some shit. You know, we're playing like, and he's like, dude, you got people in the green room who voted for Jill Stein. You got people who didn't vote.
Who I would argue is most responsible for that is Mark Zuckerberg, because Mark Zuckerberg, when Trump was elected and Mark Zuckerberg wanted to show now he's going to be a bro rather than a lefty, he announced, you know, I'm going to be more like Twitter. I'm going to be more masculine. You know, I think this talks to masculine. And the third thing he said, I'm going to move the content management team from San Francisco to Austin. And that was a way of trying to socially signal that he was going to be, you know, more Musk-like in what he was doing and less, Reid Hoffman-like, I guess, less Clintonian. And it was like, dude, you hurt yourself and you hurt Austin in that, you know, because Austin is also friggin', this is what I talked about in my South By talk. It's Fringewear. It's Rick Linkletter. It's Mike Judge.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Sterling. It's everything weird is in Austin.
Such a wonderful gumbo. It's a gumbo of freaks out here. But again, it's more the same bullshit. It's like, you know, my wife says, I just wish these people could just spend like 15 minutes with you idiots. Like, I wish she could just like be around you guys and just recognize we're
No,
all.
But the thing is, whether it's through fault of his own or not, Joe Rogan, as an entertainer, comedian, podcast host, right? And I think he would say he's no closer to God or genius than you are, right? He's a human.
Yeah,
he ended up with so much with an undue and unhealthy for everyone amount of political leverage. It created a very brittle kind of a fulcrum. You know, to have something that matters that much is and there was no way, and not that there was anything he could do to dissipate it. Was he going to stop it? I'm going to stop my show. It's gotten too important, you know. But it was like it ended up magnifying something that didn't have to be.
Well, you know, I'm glad we're talking about this because this is because I've thought about this obviously because I'm a comedian and I know comedians. I've been around comedians for over 20 years, and I know it's a personality type. There's a lot of qualities we share, and you know, we're fools, like professionally, yeah. Right? And so now what goes along with being a fool is that, and I don't mean it like idiots either, I just mean
classic fool, the one who can speak truth to power in the court and try things out, right or wrong. At least it's going to make people think.
But also I mean like another quality that goes along with being a fool is curiosity. We're very curious, and this is, you know, how are you going to write jokes if you're not curious, if you're not constantly analyzing and wondering, is there an Illuminati? What is it like? What would it be? What does the president smell like? I wonder what the president smells like. I've never smelled a president. And so if, and it'll never happen, but if I got a phone call and they're like, Trump wants to be on your podcast, you think I'm going to be like, no? Hell no. I'm going to be like, yeah, I got to smell a president. Yeah. I want to know what's it like to be around that. I want to see it and hear it and feel it and talk to it and know it. You're not thinking, I want to signal boost some point of view. If Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, anybody that I was curious about, but especially someone controlling a nuclear arsenal, wanted to like have a conversation with me, I'm going to say yes.
No, there's not. That's all true. That's the thing. But the problem, and I still think this is the problem in our civilization, is scale. That you can't scale up to that. There's a limit to the scale that a human being should be able to achieve. And not because they're too rich, but because it's too brittle. It's too...
I would never want to
be that famous.
Well, because the problem is like when you start... Nor would I. Like I think that's one of the many things I love about him is like he really has managed to like not go completely insane from that, whatever that is like. But also the other thing people forget about all of us, and especially like podcasters, is that we're like always having conversations. And like, you know what I mean? Like here I am having a conversation with you, a self-described, what did you call yourself? Lefty Pinko. What did you say you were?
I forgot. Something nice.
Yeah. And it was wonderful. And, and in those conversations, change happened. Like my conversations with you have evolved me as a person, you know, and similarly Rogan or whoever it may be, people don't seem to understand that none of us have fixed or solidified or crystallized in some view, and especially not comedians. But one thing I only speak for myself here, is that whatever phase I happen to be in, whether it's Cosmic Sailors, let's talk about floating down a different river today. The Nile of your nervous system. Because we're diving into Blue Lotus, one of the most popular plant medicines sold by Minnesota Nice Ethnobotanicals. Wait, don't skip this ad. Listen, a lot of people have heard of Blue Lotus or even tried it. Most come away thinking, it's a gimmick. That's because most of what's on the market isn't real Blue Lotus. And even when it is, people don't take enough to feel its effects. Minnesota Nice changes that. Their premium Blue Lotus extract is the real deal. And if you take 1 to 3 grams orally within 45 minutes, You'll feel like floating down the Nile on a jeweled barge, wearing eyeliner and casually communing with Horus. And it's real psychoactivity, not subtle placebo stuff. Euphoric, heart-opening bliss, relaxed but clear-headed calm, and pathogenic connection. It's amazing for intimacy and deep talks. Dream enhancement. So vivid it feels like a lucid movie. Ancient vibes. Literally used by Egyptian royalty for spiritual insight and pleasure. And they built the pyramids. Don't want to mess with measuring grams? They've got Blue Lotus gummies, 300 milligrams each, and extract capsules too. Perfectly dosed and ready to go. Head to www.mniceethno.com/Duncan and use code Duncan22 for 22% off your order. Start with the gummies if you want something playful, or dive straight into extract mode if you want to feel what the pharaohs were feeling. Trust me, this stuff works. Thank you, Minnesota Nice. Dabbling in Satanism, whether it's maybe I'm going to become a Catholic, whether it's, you know what, maybe it's time for me to become right wing, or, you know what, I'm starting to like this Karl Marx guy. I mean, he did seem pretty prescient in a lot of his analysis. That unfortunately, when we're in those phases, that's where we're at.
But the thing is, the role of the fool in society, though, is at a particular bandwidth. And this is why I talk about scale. It's like, Trump is a great comedian, but I don't think a comedian should be president. Right? Because,
oh,
right?
Fuck.
So, right?
Let me let that sink in for a second. Ah, fuck. You know, that's so funny. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off. Let me let it sink in for a second. I'd be inauthentic if I didn't. Here's why that... Wow. I'm sorry if everyone's already thought this. When I watch him, I have often thought, that's a comic. Like, he's doing stand-up. This is stand-up. He's got jokes. He's doing some kind of, like, Rodney Dangerfield thing. That Charlie Kirk thing you mentioned earlier, it's not like he said, like, Darth Vader. I do not love my enemies. I deplore my enemies. I hate them with all my... He said it in a really funny way. He's got that grin, that goofy grin on his face. I hate my enemies. I really do. I hate them. I do hate them. Maybe you could change me a little bit. I don't know.
Right.
I just happen to be up here, you know, literally saying the antithesis of the New Testament. You know, I'm just basically spitting in Jesus' face right now by exactly saying I do the opposite of what Christ recommended the world should do. But you never know. I might, you know.
Right. Exactly. And that's the way you bring the most dangerous proclamations to a people, is you say it like a joke, and people are like, was that a joke? Oh, yeah, that was a joke. Was it a joke? Until it's not a joke, right? So it's comedy can be used. It's not that comedy's bad in itself, but comedy can be used to get people used to certain ideas that start funny and then end up believed or real or whatever. And I look at Trump as a master of that, of presenting policies through comedy until they're not, oh, that was a serious proposal or not. No, you know, it's like, you know, Kim Jong-il, my nukes are bigger than yours, buddy. You know, what is he? No, he's not. Is he? When comedy is being used as a weapon in that way, we all end up on this sort of spectrum of...
But I don't think Rogan's weaponized comedy.
His comedy can be weaponized by others, but it's more a matter of when comedy is being used like that, especially in the field of politics, we do need to, I would argue, we need to reclaim comedy for the fools. There was a time, Paul Krasner, right? He used to write the magazine The Realist. He kind of invented fake news when he published, he used to publish half true, half fake stuff. He published a magazine that after the assassination of JFK, he said that he had a witness who saw Lyndon Baines Johnson penetrating the exit wound in JFK's neck on the plane, right? And people friggin' believed it, right? But at least it was coming from a poor fringe San Francisco beatnik dude. It didn't quite, it wasn't the headlines anymore. It was part of this world. It's like that weird safe space we had, even for conspiracy theory. I used to love Alex Jones stuff. You know what I mean? When you would get it on like a CD, a bootleg CD, and pop it in, it's like disinformation. And it was like, oh, could that be true? Is that, I wonder. And the alien, I wonder. There was like that Art Bell sweetness late night that we had. It was part of a counterculture of thinker people, and anything was possible. It's like, I feel like what happened is either because Trump became mainstream or Joe got so big, somehow comedy became the figure rather than the ground. It became the subject rather than the groundlings attacking the thing on the stage.
Okay. Now I can put this into context because I don't think that's even anomalous. I think it's part of the archetype because this is what I've heard. I don't know if it's true, and I'm sorry if I've mentioned this before to you or on the podcast, but I have heard that there was something they would do with a fool. So, you know, every king had the fool, the jester, whatever. And like once a year, and maybe this is just a made up story, but it's an archetype.
Sounds
once
good.
Once a year, they would make the fool the king. In the morning, the fool would come out dressed in the king's robes. Everybody thought that was fucking hilarious. It's like, look at this idiot. He's wearing the crown. But because they're cosplaying as the king, people would treat him as the king. Now he was getting all this dignity and respect. People weren't like, you dumb asshole. Will you kiss the dog's ass? I saw you lick the dog's butthole yesterday to get a laugh. You're not a king. Everyone's like, yes, your majesty. And what was fun about it was by the end of the day, the fool had started taking himself seriously. The fool was kind of enjoying the kind of king thing. And that was the funniest part of all, is this solemnity that was suddenly coming out of the fool, because the fool is a fool. And now that the people have been treating the fool like a king, the fool's reflecting that back. And then the next day, back to kissing the dog's asshole. And never, you know, but this is part of the archetype, which is, and unfortunately, because of technology, fools like me, we get to do this. And it would, if you don't have enough media literacy, it would be pretty easy to stop looking at the thing as what it is. And, you know, with what I love about Joe is he's really good at interviewing people. He's one of the best interviewers, I think. He, like, really is, like, his ability to sort of zero in on places that need to be zeroed in on and, like, sort of attacking weak parts of a person's argument, I don't think that you could even call that comedy. You know, I don't think what you're seeing there is like, I think it's just good interviewing. And but still in all, I think instead of creating some kind of limit for the reach that any of us might have via technology, why not figure out a way to remind people that a lot of what you're seeing, whether it's me or whether it's CNN or Fox or Joe or whatever, it might not be as real as it seems in that moment. And that's not bad. That's entertaining. But
it's upsetting, too, for people who, you know, the news has always been compromised, you know. William Randolph Hearst sent America to a war in Guatemala because Chiquita Banana, you know, the company wanted to get rid of a new duly elected president who was going to reclaim the land for the people. So America invades, saying it's a communist threat. And it was them, you know, or saying that, you know, marijuana is bad for you because DuPont was making nylon rope and we don't want hemp and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
It's what it is. Or the New York Times, and these are all the mainstream media news sources that were obviously seeded by something like CIA in order to get us into the Gulf War when they weren't really making a weapon of mass destruction and 100%. Blah, 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 blah.
100%.
So it's always been like that. It's just now that we're sort of waking up to it, there's a kind of a disillusion that goes along with it, wants to throw out so kind of the baby with the bathwater and believe nothing and go crazy. And
nihilism.
Yeah. We go into a kind of a nihilism. And again, and this is the thing, I'm sure people, you know, I'm going to get more anger from the left for not like challenging that, you know, whether Joe Rogan's a good interviewer or not and all. But I'm going to, I was on, I thought he was fine. I didn't have a problem with him.
Let me just say this. Don't leave Rushkoff. Attacking Rushkoff. He is so deeply one of you.
No, I'll get, I know, but it's okay. But I'll get that from the brittle ones and from the brittle right and whatever. But I still think the answer in all these cases is what we're talking, is more slack, more the sort of self-lenience and more live human relationships with other people. You gotta, yeah. I mean, I feel terrible that there's so little fucking in our society apparently now, like Gen Z, I don't get to fuck enough now.
That's
really not good. Fucking,
not good.
Fucking, let me just make a case for fucking. Fucking
Please.
Is not just to get laid. Fucking is also, it's a way of co-metabolizing this thing that we're going through together. There's a moment that can happen when you're making love with somebody where you're like, oh my God, we're really in this chaotic swirl, but I've found another soul here where, you're here, I'm here, and I'm here because it's you, and you're here because it's me, and oh my gosh, to be appreciated. Like that right now, it's like it's important. And there's other ways to get something like that sensation by sitting with people. These all sound like lefty pinko things, like ecstatic dance, campfire, s'mores with your kids, you know. And there's things you can do.
Talk
you know,
about that, fucking again.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Oh, but the fucking... But it's like these things are so missing from society. It goes all the way back, you know, to Bowling Alone, that great book about the loss of clubs and Boy Scouts and things. The kinds of things, if you think back, if you're an adult and you think back to, like, just do it as an experiment, best time with your dad. It's like, oh, right, he took me fishing on this boat. We spent this time together. It's like, nothing that he got me, none of it's just... There are these moments. You remember the eye contact. Yes. You remember those That's moments. It. That's what it is. That's the time of your life. You know?
Yeah, man.
And yes. Boy, this other shit, it doesn't... It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that there's almost nothing you can do about it except every couple of years show up and vote for... Try to vote for the one that's the less... awful. But what you can do during the time between those 2 year or 4 year intervals, you can make the world a place where it matters so much less who we put up there, because everybody getting along, just do that. Or another way to say, let's take 1% of us in America. That'd be 4 million people. Take 4 million people and dedicate them to understanding the issues. Right? Are you one of those 4 million people? If you want to go be one, join the club, understand the other 396 million of us?
Sex!
Sex and drugs and rock and roll. No, but be with each other. Make meet your neighbors. Take care of shit. Make
Absolutely.
The neighborhood nicer. Be nice to kids. Do some tutoring. Take care of the old lady.
Yep.
Make a barbecue. There's all these things we could be doing if 99% of us were taking care of each other. Imagine
yes.
how much less work those 4 million people who are figuring out the problems would have to do. And Gaza and Israel and the Middle East, we're using less oil now. We're hanging out with each other more. We're using less AI now because we're fucking and playing cards and enjoying each other. So now Qatar and whatever, those places don't matter so much because we're not buying all that crap from there. And the climate change, whether it's real or not, whatever you believe, we're making less of it if we're hanging out, you know, playing cards together and having sex.
Oh, I love it, man. This is whatever. I don't know where that falls in the political landscape, whatever you just said, but that's where I feel most at home. And I hate to think that that's going to be co-opted by one side or the other, because what everything you just went through is possible. I think it's possible. I believe in your dream. I believe it's possible. Anybody who's ever, God, I'm so sorry to say this. I would sooner smash my remaining ball with a hammer than do ecstatic dancing. But I must say, anyone who's been to like a good underground party, coming up on ecstasy, dancing with a group of people, feeling it happen, that moment where you realize I'm not a me anymore. I'm a blob at this point. I've become a blob. I don't even know if the person I'm dancing with is me or I'm them, or I don't know what this is. As Jesus said, wherever three or more of you are gathered in my name, there I will be. Something else comes in the room. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Fritz Perl, suddenly this spirit enters the room that reminds you of what humanity is capable of, and it's way more interesting connected than divided, and way more powerful connected than divided. And if you're singing the song of division, whether it's subtly or whether it's overtly, you are not getting us any closer to that world that you've been writing about and talking about and really believe in. And honestly, it's probably a little dismaying for you right now to look out and see something that seems to be quite the opposite of what you've been teaching us about for a while.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I phrase it like, oh my gosh, I really failed here, didn't I? But, you know, it's funny, in Jewish lore, and right now it's like, you know, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's the high holidays for Jews. Yeah. There's this medieval poem that they read on it's interesting, I said they. That's how alienated I feel from that whole thing right now. There's a poem called Unetana Tokef, and it's this famous poem written in medieval times, really dark, terrible, you know, when they're all shoved in the ghetto by the Vatican or whatever. And it's this famous poem that says, you know, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know, it is written, you know, who will live and who will die? Who will get sick and who will be healthy? Who will this? Like, God's writing the book of life during this week. Like, on Yom Kippur or on Rosh Hashanah, the book's opened, and on Yom Kippur, it's decreed and closed. All those things. And they go through all this, and everybody's like, doesn't want to get to this poem because it's like, oh, this is the really scary shit. Like, you know, God's deciding right now, and I better be on my best behavior and be really pure. Please don't put me in the bad book. Please don't get. It's like, you know, he's making a list and checking it twice. It's like, it's that, but it's not just for your presence. And I'm like, what the fuck is this thing? Why is this so horrible? Why are the Jews so bad? Why are they? What is that? And then I go back and look at the poem, and at the very end of the poem, it says, you know, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And through compassion and care for each other is the only way that we can lessen the decree. So it's like the shit's going to fucking happen, right? But we have a choice in how we engage with each other through it. And then I don't mean it quite this coldly, but it kind of matters less if you're going to live or if you're going to die. It really doesn't matter if you're going to be rich, you're going to be poor, you're going to be right, you're going to be wrong. It's like, or if the world, if we're going to die individually the way we would hope, or if we're going to all die together in one big thing, right? We're all going to die anyway, right? We just don't know if we're going to die together in one moment or separately with little children and other things living on. But it's like, whatever happens, if I'm here for you and you're here for me, that's it. It's still, This is all that Buddha stuff. It's still okay. It's just what's happening. We're here. We're co-metabolizing it together in compassion and in love. That's what we're called to do, not to fix the fucking problem. Really, because all the fixing tends to make it worse, but to just be with each other in love, it will be okay.
You did it! You did it! I knew you would! You did it! And you didn't fail. You didn't fail. This little temporary moment, it's like, if anything, this moment is going to show us what happens if you go in the opposite direction of what you've been teaching. And that, maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's what the world needs. We all need that. Maybe we need a taste of like, okay, here's what the opposite looks like. And, you know.
Yeah, and it's a matter of realizing you cannot be right. You are not right. We are not right. You can't be right because logic, this is not a logical universe. This is a chaotic universe with animals eating each other and stuff and little things in pain. It's just, it's, you can't be right in this. So all you can be is nice, you know?
Yeah. This is what Ram Dass said. I would rather be in love than be right. And this is, you know, what do you get from being right? Like, you know, even if you are on paper right, but you're using that as a bludgeon, you're using that to humiliate, to show people how dumb they are. Your rightness in some regard is wrongness in a million other ways. It's so brilliant what you're saying, and not to say there shouldn't be justice, and we do need to like have boundaries and all this stuff.
Compromises. Those are compromises. They're not the thing. They're the ticks. They're not the time. There's stuff we got to do. The fences that you got to build for whatever reason you have that fence. It's a compromise. Yeah. You know, it's like God's land doesn't have a division in it, but you got this fence to accomplish something for a moment.
Mr. Rushkoff, thank you so much for this. I will think about this conversation for the rest of my life, like many of our other ones. And thank you so much. I'm so happy we're friends. I'm lucky to have you as
a
friend.
Me too. I'm lucky to have you as a friend. Yeah.
It's beautiful. How can people find you? Everybody's going to want to tune into your podcast.
Yeah, do that. You're all podcasty people. Go to teamhuman.fm. You know, and or find Team Human on the thingy, whatever thingy that you use to listen to stuff. And that's a gateway drug to all my other things.
And you are the best drug out there. I'd be snorting you and playing cards and sucking on feet till the crows came home. Mr.
Excellent.
Rushkoff, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Love you.
Love you. That was Doug Rushkoff, everybody. Do subscribe to his podcast, all of his books are brilliant. Links down below. Order some. Tune in. It's not just him, by the way. He's got this incredible community of people connected to him. And I think that all of us could use a little bit of what Mr. Rushkoff is putting out in the world. Thank you so much for listening to the DTFH. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.